Depending on how familiar you are with all of those stories on there, you know that all those people at a specific moment in life, and maybe not a specific moment in life, but as a way of life, chose to do things their way, independent of what might have been best, or even independent of whether or not God had a specific thing to speak to with the crisis that they were facing. All of us in here have ways. And most of our ways are our ways that we choose independently of who God is and what God might want. This is why in the Bible, in the Old Testament portion of the Bible, in the book of Isaiah, it says this: "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts." What this says is, left to our own devices, left to our own trend line, we will not trend towards being like God. We will not trend towards honoring God. We will trend towards our own ways. And God looks at us and says, the basic way that you live your life is not according to my ways. There is this space between. A space between my ways, how you and I conduct our lives, and the ways that God would like us to conduct our lives. And we're going to talk today as to why we should consider that and why we should close that space. Why don't we pray and ask God to help us here today? Let's pray. God, thank you for the opportunity to create space in our schedules like most of us have. All of us have here today. We've created an hour space in our schedule to sit here and stand here and to think about what it is that you might say to our life. And so as we cap off this entire series today, I pray that you'd bring a lot of the loose ends together and that you'd help me to know how to best communicate what you want to have done today. And I pray that all of us would come to see your ways as the things that we should aspire to incorporate into our life. And these things I pray in the name of your Son. Amen. Well, we've been dealing with this paradigm, this whole series, that all of us have our limits. The absolute maximum capacity that we have, and inside of our limits is our load. That's our current amount of scheduled appointments, our time commitments, our financial commitments, our career commitments, all the things that are scheduled and locked into our lives. And then whatever's left over, that's the space between. And that the space between, that place that's unaccounted for, that's the place where eternally significant things happen. That's where we serve other people. That's where relationships happen. That's where God speaks to us. That's where we have the opportunity to test ourselves and do some deep inner reflection. And most of us don't have that space, and as a result, we don't have God's ways, and as a result, we don't have any kind of spiritual sanity about our lives. Remember that old Grape Nuts commercial? I just saw a Grape Nuts commercial last night. I hadn't seen one for decades. Remember the old one with Yul Gibbons? See if you can finish it for me. What's he say? He says, "You ever read a pine tree? Many parts are edible, you know." That's what he said next. You watch this commercial, you go, well, what is that about? Of course, what they don't tell you is that Yul Gibbons died of stomach cancer. So I guess you can go ahead and eat the pine tree, but it's not all that healthy for you. Well, many of the things that you and I do, many of our ways, you can do it, but it's grape nut philosophy. You could do it, but eventually, sooner or later, it will take a toll on your life. We're going to talk about four things today that God's ways are. And they're things that have been woven throughout this whole series. But let's step back and take another bird's eye view and just try to convince each other, convince ourselves. I'm actually going to try to convince you that there, when you have a gap between your ways and God's ways, life doesn't work. This is the only place we don't want a space. We don't want a space between my ways and God's ways. We want it to be right in line with the exact same thing. And here's why. Four things. God's ways are number one. God's ways are explicit. God's ways are explicit. A number of years ago, I had people who were closest to me, my wife and other people I work very closely with, were really challenging me and telling me that I was as not emotionally engaged or dialed into their world as they wanted, that I was not as sensitive as they needed me to be, and the effect of my words was not positive, and they had a lot of things that they did not like about me. And so I decided to go to counseling. So I went to a Christian counselor, and I sat down and I said, here's why I'm here. And I told him everything I just told you right now. And then I said, now just so you have all the information and you can hear my perspective, you can hear the way I see this, I'm a little frustrated right now. Said to this guy that I thought that part of the problem was I was being held to a standard of a 21st century male that is a nice standard. There's nothing wrong with being a nice, sensitive 21st century male. But if I lived in a different era, if I lived in the 1950s or 1920s or something like that, and I'm the same kind of guy right now, just an average guy who likes to scratch himself, if I was that kind of guy, you know, that I wouldn't get all of this grief. And the problem was not really me. The problem was the expectations people had on me. Because I said, you know, I'm kind of one of those guys that's like John Wayne or Fred Flintstone or, you know, one of those kind of guys. And I'll never forget what the guy said to me. And he said, well, Brian, our standard should not be other men, regardless of what the time frame is. Our standard is what God would say that we need to be that's found in the Bible. Ow, ow, ow. All of a sudden, he kind of took it to a whole new level that I wasn't really anticipating. Well, here's what he was saying. He's basically saying this principle comes from Psalm 119 in the Bible. It says this. I have considered my ways, and I have turned my steps to your statutes. I will hasten not delay to obey your commands. My steps, your statutes, commands. Basically, God's ways. I've considered my ways, and have turned to adopt your ways. He nailed me. He had exactly correct. I was following my ways. I wasn't thinking about what the Bible said about my ways should be. Now, I know most of us in here, and I do mean this, I know most of us in here really don't have a desire to know what God's ways are as found in the Bible. We say, some of us say we do, but when we're really faced with it, we really don't. And you need to realize that God gives over and over and over and over again all kinds of instructions, all kinds of ways in the Bible. This is a very fascinating thing. Hang in with me for a couple minutes here. The first portion of the Bible, the first five books, especially books 2 through 5, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, is just way after way, instruction after instruction, commandment after commandment, do this, and we read this as Americans, we go, oh, what is this deal that God has of trying to tell us what to do all the time? Now, I read the Bible a few times, and you know that oftentimes people in the Bible, often, frequently, probably the majority of the time, people in the Bible do not go in the ways that God would have them go. That just is a basic thing. They just don't. But you know what you never find in the Bible? At least I've never found it. I can't remember a single time anybody in the Bible going, God, would you stop with the instructions? Would you stop with the ways? I'm tired of it. Don't bring that crap around here. I don't want to stop. I'm tired of it. Why is that? Well, here's why. It is because they viewed those explicit ways, those explicit instructions, as a blessing to them. You see, in the ancient world in which the Bible was formed, people lived under this constant fear of what the gods might be thinking. Very similar to the movie that came out a couple decades ago called The Gods Must Be Crazy. Remember that? Got the Aborigine guy, finds a Coke bottle trying to figure out what in the world this is about. And he just has no idea of how to make sense of this thing called life and what the gods are doing. And this is what happened in the ancient world, and actually today in many worlds. We look at what happens in our life, in our worlds, and we go, God, what are you doing? Because whenever there was an earthquake or a disaster or a flood or a flu epidemic or whatever it was, people would say, oh no, we've upset God. What did we do to upset God? And they all had these gods or God, whatever their idea of a God was, and their God never told them how life was to work. And so this is how superstitions arose. They'd have a flood and they go, oh, what caused that? I know. I must have stepped on the crack in the little sidewalk there, and that's what did it. And that's how superstitions arose, because they're trying to figure out, what did I do that caused this thing? And so on the scene comes God, the real God, the true God. And he says, I want to bless you, and I want to tell you how this thing called life works. And that's why all these people in the Bible, they said, God, give me more. Come on, tell me. Because we're tired of this confusion thing. We're tired of this thing of not knowing who you are and what you want. God is about relationship. And when you're about relationship, you want to communicate. And God wanted to communicate so we could have relationship. And people in the Bible saw his ways, his explicit ways, as what they're intended to be. And that was a blessing. Whereas for you and I, it's not a blessing for us. Because we're really not interested in God's ways. We're interested in my ways. But God is explicit about these things, because he cares for us so much, and he says, this is just the way life works. That's the second thing. God's ways are effective. They're effective. How about that BMW commercial? Have you seen a BMW commercial with all the young guys who are driving around, and the one guy's got a BMW, and he's kind of better than the other guys who got domestic cars? Have you seen that one? They say, hey, you going to come over to the game tonight? And he says, oh, I can't, I got to work. And what's he doing that night? What he's doing, he's working his second job delivering pizzas to pay for his car. So he delivers his pizzas to his friends who are watching the thing. Have you seen that? It's a great, it's a fantastic commercial because it shows that this guy, because of his wants, not understanding his wants and needs and trying to add more great stuff to his life that he couldn't afford, he's missing out on life. He's missing the space to really enjoy life. It's a fantastic commercial that spells out reality. And so when God gives us these instructions about creating financial space and not constantly trying to impress people with our possessions and all that stuff, it's there because He wants us to have an effective life. This is why in the book of 1 Kings, chapter 2, 1 to 3, it says this. The time drew near for David to die. This is King David, the king of Israel at this point. He gave a charge to Solomon, his son. I am about to go the way of all the earth. In other words, I'm going to die. He said, so, be strong, show yourself a man, and observe what the Lord your God requires. Walk in His ways, and keep His decrees and commands, His laws and requirements, as written in the law of Moses, so that you may prosper in all you do and wherever you go. He says here to his son, you're going to become king, and you need to order your personal life and your business life as being the king according to God's ways. And if you do that, you will be prosperous. Your life will be effective. Do it. It's a blessing that God is giving you. It will be effective. Now, most of us really didn't read this slide at all because we got zoned out the previous slide. So let me go to that previous slide for a moment here. We looked at this and said, so be strong, show yourself a man. We're going, what kind of sexism is that in the Bible? So be strong, show yourself a man. This is not sexism. This is not sexism. What this is simply a dialogue between two guys who are trying to elevate each other's game. That's all it is. And this guy just looks down and says, hey, son, I'm telling you, it's going to take every bit of your courage. You're going to have to be a real man about this. You're going to have to be very courageous because God's ways are not easy. I got a great sermon today. I got four E's. They all start with E. You got to love that, you know. Whenever you can do that, all E's, you know, it's kind of a fixation I learned in seminary. You just got to love that whole thing, four E's. There's one E that's not going to be in today. The word easy. God's ways are not easy. Never said they were. God never said they were. They're not easy. I always laugh when somebody says that God's ways are for the weak. Because I look at them and say, well, what are your ways like? Have you ever considered that you've chosen the ways that you're going because they're the easiest for you? When you start getting serious about God and wanting to honor Him with all your ways, it is hard. Only the strong can do that. And the fact of the matter is, all of us are following somebody's ways. All of us. Whether it's the business's ways or our own personal comfort zone's ways, all of us are. And when you try to get off of your mark into another page to be on God's ways plan, it is hard. It is difficult. It takes everything, your entire intestinal fortitude, to try to get on that plan. I've had so many. I want to accomplish two things right now for the next couple minutes. I want to accomplish illustrating this point of how God's ways are effective and how they're not easy. And I also want to take it to answer a lot of questions I've been getting so frequently that tie into this exact idea of having God's ways. Well-meaning people, great-meaning people, oftentimes approach me because they see things that are happening around here and they try to figure out why the ways that we're following are the ways that we're following. And let me say this. I like the business world. I've learned from the business world. And when business people or business jocks come up and they want to talk about something, I love staying in tune because I know I can learn something. I like the business world. I read the Wall Street Journal every day. One of my favorite books I read in the last year was Jack Welch's Straight from the Gut. I dig the business world and what's going on there. But here's what I know. I know all the great principles that are operating in the business world have their original roots in God's ways in the Bible. And sometimes, some of the ways of the business world that might work in the business world or might be wise in the business world are not God's ways for the church world. Oftentimes, talk to people and say, hey, you know, Crossroads need to have 3 to 6 months of liquidity on hand of operating budget. That needs to happen. And I say, okay, who says? Whose ways? And if you can have that for your business, if we can have that around here, that'd be fantastic. We'd love that. Woohoo! That'd be great. So, but let me make sure I get this straight. You're saying that a value should be that a church should have all this cash just sitting there when we're doing stuff like trying to tutor kids and over the Rhine and build that program. It takes a lot of cash. And you're saying we should just sit on money when kids club programs go into the roof and we need staff needs to try to build people and grow people. And when we should bring our A game and excellence to creativity to try to help grow all of us. And you think that we should just like have gobs of cash for a rainy day. And I say to them, it's raining. It's raining. God doesn't give money to be saved for a rainy day. To a church, He says, I'm giving it because I want you to build in lives and invest. You know, one of the things, that the business ways of fundraising strategies. They say, here, we'll do this. Let's take the needs of all the money the Crossroads needs and all the attendance, and let's just do the math, and here's everybody's number. Here's everybody's fair share. And so we never did fair share. We'll never do fair share. God's very clear as to how the funding of the local church operates. Very, very clear what His ways are. People, in and of their own desire, come to a place where they joyfully start giving back and starting at 10%. And, you can debate now the cows come in, whether that should be local church or other parts involved in that or whatever. But that is God's design. That's His way to fund the local church. There'll be no bake sales. There'll be no grand rummage sales out in the parking lot. There'll be no pyramid schemes where if everyone switches long-distance carriers or cleaning products, the church gets kickbacks. There'll be no Brian Wells bobblehead dolls. There'll be none of that stuff. So those might all be great ideas, and they might generate huge amounts of cash, but that's not the way that God has ordained and designed a church to operate. We put our numbers in the program every week. Just because we want to show people we're not hiding anything. There's, nothing that we're freaking out about. There's what the finances are looking like. And we've been spending money that God's given us space for. We've been able to spend it. God's given us space. And when it goes down, Crossroads will change. And God will communicate it to us that, hey, that gap can't exist all that time. And we'll take that as marching orders from God that things need to change. But when God gives to a church, the ways it's built into people, those are the effective ways. In your life, you've got to ask yourselves, the things that happen in my life, whatever the sphere of influence I'm in, is it God's ways or is it my way? Because it's not just in relationship to a local church. It's every aspect of your life. God's ways are encompassing. God's ways are encompassing. As we've talked about this space between, we've realized that when we came into this series, most of us look like this. In fact, most of us still look like this, where there is no space between our limits and our loads. We are completely maxed out. But what happens is, as you start reordering your world with individual decisions, individual ways, you start gaining space. So you start making decisions about your time and taking a day off. Maybe you work 7 days a week. You start saying, God, you're clear about this. I need to take a day off. You get a little space. You start making decisions about your physical fitness, not eating as much crap and exercising a little bit more and all that stuff. You start to gain space. By the way, have you noticed, generally speaking, have you noticed the people at work who are missing work are the ones who haven't been taking care of themselves physically? That's generally the way it works because that's not the way God has designed our body to work. You start creating space so we can flex and deal with flu bugs. Decisions about how to manage our money, separating, as Brian Wells talked last week, between the difference between wants and needs. Decisions about how to manage our career. Decisions about how to do relationships. All these things, it's an all-encompassing cumulative effect of creating space in our life. Proverbs says this. It says, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him. In all your ways. Lean not on your understanding of how you think life should work, but in all your ways acknowledge Him. I recently read again the book of Acts, which is a book in the New Testament that highlights the acts of the early church right after Jesus left the earth. And it struck me, I've read it before, but it struck me this time how oftentimes this church, this community of Christ followers is referred to as the Way. They called themselves the Way. Other people called them the Way. Now, that is weird. The Way. In fact, how would you feel if there was some organization around here called the Way, and you found out your friend was going to, where are you going to? I'm going to the Way. How would you feel about that? You say, well, I'd probably feel the same way they feel about me going to Crossroads. It's probably about the same way I'd feel. By the way, we'll have the matching sweatsuits and sneaker program next week in your program. Check that out, please. But what, we don't understand things that are moving. things that are having an impact. And all these people looked at this group of people and they said, I don't understand you, but the ways that you operate as a community, it is incredible. They look at their lives and say, you save sex for marriage? You love people? You go out and minister to the lepers? Because nobody was ministering to the poor. Nobody was doing it. No one was ministering to the leper. That was a Christian attribute. They would go and they would minister to the leper because they said, it's not right for us to create space in this area, everybody else afraid of catching some disease. But God said, no, you go and minister to people, irregardless of what that might do to you. And people look at them and say, you're unbelievable how you love people, how you minister to people. They'd see how they would take their financial possessions and they would sell their stuff and they would give it to the poor. They would see how they were hospitable with one another. They'd see the quality, integrity of their marriages. And people would say, whatever's going on in your thing, it's pretty shocking. It's pretty amazing. The ways that you operate, how you are moving, because this community, these people, saw life as all-encompassing and honoring God in every single way. When I first started to really get the passion to do this series for 6 weeks, the thing that really crystallized it for me was when I was in my car and I was stuck on Garfield Place and there was a car in front of me and they stopped for no apparent reason. And so I was okay for about 15 seconds. And I said, what is up with that? So I'm starting to get annoyed about it. And you know why I'm getting annoyed? I'm getting annoyed because I had no space between my appointments. I had just enough time to drive from this place to the next place. And so since there's no space, you get annoyed. Okay? Space. Here it is. So then I'm getting all annoyed. And I'm thinking, well, maybe I should turn around them or whatever. So I'm inching my car one way and the other. And I'm kind of leaning, looking outside the windshield. And I see what the deal is. A car two ahead of me. There's a car with an elderly gentleman that's trying to get into the back seat. The person is out of the driver's seat helping this elderly person with a walker as he's trying to fold up his walker and get into the back seat. All of a sudden, my perspective changed immediately. All of a sudden, I could have sat there for 2 hours because I had perspective. I had perspective. One of the reasons why we won't change our ways is that we lack God's perspective. We are so fixated on our current load and our current commitments and our current obligations and all those things that we lack the perspective that God would have for us that comes back and looks at the totality of life. I thought that this past week when one of our computer guys said, hey, for this message, you might want to get this game that's out called The Sims. I don't know if you've heard this computer game called The Sims. It's about a computerized family that is simulated. The Sims. How many of you have, played this game? You need to get life. Let me just say it right now. It's a very interesting thing. I was very intrigued by this thing because I went to the website, and I saw the website. It says, you get to play God. And so the whole point of this thing is you get to create who the person is you're going to control. And of course, we all create the person who looks like us, is what we do. So you create the hairstyle, the body type, all that stuff. And then it gets plopped into life, as you see right there. And then you get to choose what this person does and where they go. And so I thought it was really fascinating, the level of control that you could have to play God over this person. So I thought it was going to be really fun. It wasn't. It wasn't fun for me at all. It was incredibly annoying. Because the way people programmed this life was according to the American way. And when you really take a look at the American way, stepping back, it's really annoying and fruitless. First thing I did, I got in the game. You know what I want to do? I wanted to get a job. That's what I wanted to do. I mean, get me some jack and start, working my... I couldn't get a job. I had to build my house first. I didn't even have a job yet. I had to go to mom and borrow money from her. I'm going, hold on. I don't have... I wouldn't even let me get a job. I went out. I had to go out to the front thing, get the newspaper. I got this from the directions, open the newspaper. I can't get the newspaper and get the job. It says, no, you must borrow money from mom to build your house. What? What am I going to do that for? It's ridiculous. And I watch this thing. I'm going... Certainly, and you see something that gets simulated like that, and they simulate it like that because that's the average life you and I live. When you look at it from that perspective, you go, this is nuts. You mean the purpose of my life is to walk over the bookshelf, get the cookbook so I can learn how to cook a meal, take a bath, figure out wall coverings, come over here, it's just this robotic thing, and you go, certainly, life has got to be more than that, don't you think? Have you ever had a bird's eye view and taken a look at your life? And said, certainly. Life has got to be more than about fulfilling my commitments and having my meanings and upgrading this and add, right? I mean, I hope that we're here today because we're recognizing that. If life isn't here because there's a being, there's a God who cares for us and wants us to have a relationship that stretches out into eternity. And the way for us to enjoy that is by ordering our ways right now in light of that. The knife, it's just stupid. It makes sense. Certainly there's got to be more in life than just bolting on vacation modules like there is in Sims and everything like that. There has to be more. Life doesn't make sense without it. That's why God is so explicit, so clear. This is the way it works, because this is the way life works. Life is not effective. It doesn't work unless you're in my ways. That's the whole meaning and purpose of life. And then when that happens, the fourth thing happens, and that is that God's ways are expansive. God's ways are expansive. The more that we close the gap between my ways and God's ways, the more we start aligning our passions, our heart, our emotions, our activities, our objectives, our goals, the more that we align that up with God's ways, what happens is not that we lose our life, but we gain life. That we start to experience this place, this thing called life, the way it was originally intended to be experienced. That's why Jesus says in the book of Luke chapter 6, he says, "Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, will be poured into your lap, for with the measure you use, it will be measured to you." What's Jesus say here? My ways are not to slam on people. My ways are to be forgiving other people. My ways are to be a generous financial giver. And when you're in my ways, when you're in God's ways, what happens? God expands your limits. He starts pouring things into your life. A good measure. Pressed down. Go jam it all in. Shaking over. Getting it all right. Overflowing, because God says, "Oh, that's the life I want to get involved with. That's the life that if I give stuff to, it'll flow out of." God only will give you what will flow out of you. And when you don't have any space, you're showing you're just trying to cram everything for yourself and not be a conduit to God's ways in this world. And you don't lose life, you get life when you get in the midst of God's ways. I just think about this last weekend. The examples that I sense from my own life about the space thing, I just see it so clearly over and over and over again. It's this critical thing. And I can give you 5 examples every day of how I see these realities. I'll give you just one example from the last 7 days. I had the opportunity, invitation to go and officiate at somebody's funeral who comes here at Crossroads. Didn't know her. Her dad died unexpectedly, 6 years old, just died away. And I've never really met her and talked with her. I had space. I had space in my schedule to go and officiate at that funeral. Now, Crossroads does not pay our staff to be professional friends. We don't do that. We pay our staff to create systems that help all of us go to the place where God wants us to be. But one of our systems is to try to provide a staff person to help with something like that. Well, I had space in my schedule and was able to go with that, and I'm so glad I did, because when I went, my heart got expanded. I was where God wanted me to be, and my heart got expanded. One of the ways it got expanded is I was talking with this woman, and she said, "I cannot believe how my community has blessed me." She comes with, there's a group of them that come, and they come to different things here at church, and they do life with one another because she's made space in her life for significant relationships. She's made space. And now, in the moment of crunch time, she got her heart expanded because people came and ministered to her like somebody who was paid could never do. She said, "Oh, this is a blessing. This is a blessing." Something magical happened with her. I talked to those of you who are counselors. You know that most of your casework is from people who do not have space to have real friends, so they ought to pay you to be their friend. There are times that we need a counselor who is specifically trained in an area that's going to be able to add value. But for most of us, we go to counselors because we have not made space in our lives for significant friendships, and so we've got to pay somebody to listen to us. We've got to pay somebody to tell us truth, that a friend who loves us and cares for us would tell us truth. And it goes back to this thing of just cramming our life full and not being able to do life with each other and have community the way God originally intended it to be done. We've looked at this thing over and over from different angles, this entire series, because we've wanted to nail down that this idea of the American way and having more and more, bigger and bigger, more commitments, the American way is not God's way. And sooner or later you come to the realization it doesn't work. It doesn't work. And to help us drive that into our minds, let's revisit some of the things that we've seen and learned over the last 6 weeks. If you don't have any space at all in your life, you can fake it for a long time. You can get by. But then all of a sudden, you get slammed and you get it real quick. We realize that if we don't have a space, life won't work. And see, here's the thing. It is in the space that all the significant things happen in life. It's in the space that we connect with God.
So we learn to smile when somebody has something and then very quickly run out and find a way to grab as much of it as we can. Everyone in your life has something that's better than yours.
You take the first dollar, 10%, and you put that money back to God. You say, thank you, God. I need to return this back to you and build into people the way you build into me, and I want to extend what you are about in this world.
I mean, I will admit, it is not easy for me. I struggle, and then we kept thinking, oh, well, if I just made this much, and I just made this much. John has come a long way in his salary, and the more he makes, it's so difficult to give because it's a big chunk of money. And I think every month, I'm like, gosh, what could I do with that?
I don't believe that we've ever had a situation where we've had the nation's number one most offensive pastor against the nation's number one defensive pastor going into this game.
No question about it, Brad. No question about it. No question about it.
Wells to kick off. Kick. Fumble on the opening kickoff, but Tome has it. Brian Tome will take the ball.
You know, there's a difference between being slammed, keeping up with it, being slammed on your back, gasping for air. And that's exactly what happened to me, and I didn't know it. I didn't know it in my marriage with Libby. If it wasn't the long hours, it was when I was home, I was still here because my mind wasn't with her with my marriage. I was just way, way out there.
I met with Brian, and I told him, I said, I have absolutely no time to get involved in church, so I'm going to.
You know something's wrong, and so you try to put some fixes on it and try to do some things that'll work, and those fixes backfire, and they don't work.
We laugh because it's childish, but you know what? You know what? It's not the toys that make that childish. It's the concept. The problem is that money does buy happiness, but it's at a fairly low and temporary level.
And I've realized more recently at 40 years old, just starting to get it, that more importantly, what do my wife think of me? What do my kids think of me? And what do I want to become? And it came during a time when I was talking to my 10-year-old son who had got a detention for not finishing his homework and had come up with every single excuse under the sun, including the dog ate it, as to why he didn't get it done. And we talked about accountability, which he had no understanding of what the word was. But when we talked about it, he said, yeah, Dad, you are always accountable. And I said, you know what? I'd love to be able to tell you I am, but I'm not. And I said, I pledge at 40 and you pledge at 10 that we begin together starting to be accountable, that I become the person that you want me to be, and you become the person that you want to be.
Very first week of this series, I said that I was going to be very redundant, saying the same thing numerous ways from different angles, and that was because the American way is such an overwhelming way that you and I deal with 24/7 that is not necessarily God's way. And the American way works as far as building a great economy and getting stuff. But when it comes to having a life of meaning and significance and order and perspective and peace, it does not work. It will fail every time. And that we needed to realize that talking about this for just an hour a week when 24/7 we get messages that are exactly the opposite. It's like throwing a pea at a tank. And so we need to come at this from different ways. And so we're going to do a song that we've done before. And as we do this song, we're not doing this song because the band doesn't know any other songs. They've forgotten more songs than you and I will ever know. It's not that. It's because the message of this song is at the core of what we've talked about. Self-help stuff is great stuff, but at some point, self-help doesn't help. At some point, there is a power that is beyond what yourself can provide. There is a power that only comes from the presence of God that ultimately has to define this space, expand this space, and help us understand this thing called life. And what the song is about is to recognize that God, I don't need to strive for more. I don't need to strive for better. I don't need to strive to impress other people or to try and impress myself. God, I need to come to a place where you are enough for me. Regardless of what else I get or what other accolades I have, you are enough for me. And I want your power and I want your ways to define my life. Why don't we stand together? Let's stand right now. Let's stand and let's pray. God, we stand right now. Some of us are standing just because I said that we need to stand. But others of us, as we stand right now, this is a defining moment because as we stand, we are standing before you. We stand before you, said, God, here I stand. I want my ways to be your ways. Here I stand, and I'm going to start taking steps to narrow the gap, narrow the space between my ways and your ways. And God, I want to tell you right now that you are enough. And even though I might not fully and completely believe it to the core of my being, I want that to be the case. And so God, I pray for all these people that as we sing this song, that you would unleash your power in a mystical and powerful way as we connect with the meaning of this song. Because God, you are enough. You are enough. Thank you.